Can we take our seats? We'll apologize to those who'd come and join us later on that we started the meeting without them. But for now, I think we should proceed. We're meant to start at 9:30. We are somehow a little bit... We've started eating into the time of the presenters and our discussions. Let me welcome all of you, especially our presenters for this morning. They are almost familiar faces. They are part and parcel of the budget making of the South African evolution. The most important thing is that we are all in the process of making history. So our contributions, your contributions, will go down the annals of our history as to how we try to shape our future and the future of future generations. So as much as you've become part and parcel of us, it is so precisely because we are co-governed and co-determined to make sure that what Parliament presents to the people of South Africa is something that years down the line we can all be proud of. We're also meeting immediately after, a week after, the budget speech, of which all of us, irrespective of where we stand and how we think ideologically and otherwise, we think it is a very, very good and positive budget for the country. And I must say, we've already congratulated the National Treasurer and the Minister in particular. National Treasurer representatives are here. That when you go through our budget, you then understand why, in terms of international rating, in terms of transparency, consistency, predictability, we are rated among the best, if not number one, in the world. So that to us should be a premise on which we begin to understand the seriousness of our work and the contributions that we make as a collective. Of course, without stakeholders, we will not be where we are as a country. The best gift we have for our country and democracy is a vibrant civil society. Very vibrant. It knows what it expects and why it votes political parties and representatives to come and sit here. So I thought I should just give this background to cement our understanding of our responsibilities and the tasks ahead of us. With me, I'm going to be co-chairing this meeting with the chair of appropriations, select committee on finance, Mr. Charles DPS. We will be taking four presentations today, honorable members. The first presentation will be as per your program. You have it in front of you. By the manufacturing circle. The presentation will be done by the executive director, Mr. Konrad Bezuidenhout. I hope I pronounced your name very, very well. The second presentation will be done by Business Unity South Africa, of course, one of the familiar faces, Professor Raymond Parsons, Deputy CEO of BUSA. He's also, of course, joined by Ms. Lee Padayachi, Parliamentary Liaison Officer of BUSA. That's the extent to which business has managed to identify its role, not only in terms of interacting with government at the level of the executive, but they've got a permanent representation in Parliament, so that from time to time they are up to scale and up to speed on issues that we need to focus on. Thank you very much for being here. Kundan, are you ready? Mense? All right. I think they are ready for you and for your presentation. We're taking this presentation in order to shape the presentation and the report of the committee on the fiscal framework proposals, because it is precisely this fiscal framework that determines even your future medium-term budget policy statement. If we miss a step here, we may actually run the risk of rewriting this chapter of good successes and history that we have as a country. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the introduction. I think by way of background, I'd just quickly like to say it is the first opportunity that the manufacturing circle is taking to come and present to the joint sitting of the finance committees on the budget. The manufacturing circle is a relatively recent feature of organized business. It started in 2008 because of a pervasive sense amongst manufacturers that there were certain priority issues that needed to be dealt with from an overall manufacturing perspective. They focus on priority issues that can be dealt with in a relatively short space of time. They started out as a result of tremendous concern about the position of the manufacturing sector in South Africa and the fact that it's hemorrhaging jobs and declining when it is a very high multiplier as far as job creation and economic growth is concerned. On a personal note, Chairperson, I'd also just like to say it's very pleasant to be here for me, as I started out as a parliamentary monitor, so I learned a lot from sitting, watching you and other members here. And so perhaps if you were not looking forward to my presentation, you've got yourself to blame in part. By way of introduction, as far as the matters at stake today is concerned, we obviously welcome the opportunity to be here. We see ourselves as a partner to government, although we're not active in NEDLAC as far as the formal discussions with social partners are concerned. We do partner with Labour and with the government on specific issues, and we interact very closely. In terms of its contribution to the economy, manufacturing may have been in decline since 1981, but it still remains one of the top three contributing sectors to the economy. It is a high multiplier sector with great potential to grow the economy in a way that will create jobs. The inputs contained in the document on which my presentation is based today speaks to the budget from priority issues that challenge the growth and job-creating power of manufacturing in South Africa today, and are amongst other informed by direct member inputs made at our most recent plenary meeting of 20 February 2012. Those meetings are attended by the CEOs of our members. It's approximately 40 companies representing about 150,000 jobs in South Africa today. The manufacturing circle appreciated the Minister of Finance's recognition of the importance of growing the manufacturing in South Africa for manufacturing sector for South Africa to create jobs. We noted the Minister's assertion of the World Bank's contention that 85 million jobs, manufacturing jobs, may shift from China to other countries in the coming years. The manufacturing circle is not confident that this shift will indeed occur to the extent that it is foreseen, but we do, however, identify strongly with the question that the Minister of Finance posed in his budget speech when he asked whether we have the right policies, conditions and boldness to gain from these shifts should they occur. Indeed, this is central to the manufacturing circle's quest. I'd like to make some select comments with regards to macroeconomic policy. The manufacturing circles or manufacturers in general tend to be very practical. As far as high economics is concerned, there are certainly other organizations which focus more intensely on that, and there are people here that can address general fiscal policy and monetary policy concerns. But there are two points that I would like to lift out, and it relates to what is written in the third and second last paragraphs on page 7, where the document says, the manufacturers believe that greater clarity in respect of government's long-term fiscal position is becoming increasingly necessary and would have been greatly aided if the minister provided a progress report or timeline for the fiscal review mooted by him in his 2011 medium-term budget policy statement. The minister alluded then that such a review was necessary to explore the implications for government finance of major long-term priorities, including improved infrastructure investment and maintenance, social security and retirement reform, the establishment of national health insurance, the role of development finance institutions, and the strengthening of our municipal finances. This is not only important in terms of pushing consumption expenditure down, but also in terms of starting to pull more people into productive employment. To do this, the manufacturers believe that any pending fiscal review should target facilitating ever greater levels of competitiveness for the private sector in general, and reducing business costs for high multiplier industries such as manufacturing, mining and agro-processing in particular. In view of the strong cost push of bunched up administered prices in the current environment, as we engage in yet another push to accelerate infrastructure rollout, we believe the Minister gestured at something very important when he said in his MTBPS speech of last year that it is important to find the right balance between cost recovery from users of services and general tax funding. Manufacturers are not suggesting that users should not pay for the services they receive, but the knock-on effect of administered prices set by a range of state entities without consideration to our national job creation goals, taking for granted the timing of other administered cost increases, is increasingly undermining the ability of firms to compete. The situation needs to be addressed at an overall policy level as a matter of urgency, and we hope that when that fiscal review gets published, we would see that attention would have been paid to that. Then, just as far as monetary policy is concerned, the manufacturing circle has got a very particular view, which is set out in broad terms on page 8 of the document before you. Basically, the sense amongst manufacturers are that price stability or focus on price stability and the effects that it has in terms of supporting the strength of the currency is not conducive for high multiplier sectors such as mining, manufacturing and agro-processing to make the contributions that it can to economic growth and job creation in South Africa. I think this view has been strengthened to what we saw happening last year in the fourth quarter when the currency moved between more competitive levels, approximately between 7.50 and 8.50 to the dollar. Quarter labor force statistics in the beginning of this year, well, actually the Tuesday before the State of the Nation indicated that in that quarter 52,000 jobs were created in the manufacturing sector, and the sector believes that this is the result of the more competitive currency levels that we saw at that time. We realize that this is not a universally held view, and it could lead to protracted debate, but we do believe that a review of monetary policy to support job creation, economic growth is necessary, and that it must be viewed against the need for trade-offs to be made, trade-offs that many of our policy documents, such as the New Growth Path and the National Development Plan, acknowledges need to be made. And it will certainly benefit high multipliers if we do veer in that direction. Chairperson, now as far as the more immediate practical concerns are expressed in the document, I would like to turn to page 9, where there is a section on infrastructure. The manufacturers welcome the spending plans in respect of improving rail and general transport infrastructure, which although it's focused quite a bit on the primary sector of the economy, will have spin-offs for manufacturing, because it will alleviate a number of long-standing concerns, which are bulleted on page 9. We must just again caution that cost recovery for such expansions must at all times be prioritized to be done as equitably, cost-effectively, gradually as possible to avoid unnecessary cost shocks. I think as far as that's concerned, you know, the simple route, the simplest route, often tends to be the best route. If we do have ability to finance something over longer periods to make the cost impact more palatable, then we should pursue that. And it should be top of mind at all our state entities that set these administered prices or that have to recoup these costs to determine their way of financing and funding the expansions in that way. We further caution that if these infrastructure projects are to impact job creation positively and expeditiously, steady delivery momentum must be achieved and maintained. The Minister spoke to this in his budget speech, and we think he adopted quite a correct tone there. This has got a direct impact on local manufacturers, as the lack of consistent infrastructure spend does prohibit local contractors from investing in local manufactured equipment to gear up their capacity on an ongoing basis. As far as administered prices is concerned, Chairperson, I think this is perhaps one of the key concerns at the moment where these committees can help, where the budget review capacity that you have set up here at Parliament and spent so much effort in setting up at Parliament can perhaps be of assistance. We need a solution to this problem, and we would like to ask, plead for this committee's, these committees' help in coming up with a solution as to how to address this going forward, how infrastructure should be funded and financed, where the money should come from, is a question that we should keep on interrogating, especially in light of the significant impact that it has on our competitiveness. Other than that, we must just mention that we welcome the reduction of port charges for manufactured goods that President Zuma announced in his State of the Nation address, and we look forward to further clarity on that. Excuse me, Chairperson. And then we also need to make mention of the 5.75 billion rand allocated to reduce the burden on consumers will face the impact of the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project. This is welcomed as it demonstrates the government is willing to reconsider where its policies may have negative implications for consumers, growth and jobs. I must just also say that administered prices is one of those things that does not only speak to the needs of business, but it speaks to the needs of consumers in general. It is one of the key factors pushing up inflation at the moment, and it will certainly not only benefit businessmen and women or companies or the employed, but also the unemployed and the poor if this is addressed. As far as electricity is concerned, we also welcome the President's focus in his State of the Nation address on the need to bring down the cost of electricity price increases in support of economic growth and job creation. It was, however, regrettable that more detail was not available at the time that the budget speech was delivered. So we do look forward to further details in this regard. we have noticed or we have come under the impression that there seems to be a perception from Treasury side that the current demand side management allowances that are made provision for in 12L of the Income Tax Act and the demand side incentives that are available from ESCOM is sufficient to help business absorb some of the cost of the steep tariff increases that we've seen over the last 3 years. Urgent action that extends beyond the nature of these incentives as they currently stand is necessary. As these incentives require capital to be invested in order to change behavior, it doesn't per se help to absorb costs. In actual fact, it rather creates extra demands on cash flow. So therefore, if the intention is to help business to improve its competitiveness by way of a mechanism to try and absorb some of these steep cost increases, then the situation will have to be reconsidered. And this is explained in box one that stretches over page 10 and 11 of the presentation or the document before you. As far as the job support schemes that have been mentioned in this budget and previous budgets, it's obviously something that manufacturers are thankful for. But often when these allocations are announced, we find that the tire is nowhere near ready to hit the tar. And it takes quite a bit of time for the schemes to be finalized, exactly what they will do, the institutional readiness to be achieved, and for them to be rolled out. And so an example of this, for instance, is the jobs fund that's being run through DBSA, which was announced last year. It could only start to gather steam in July. And in this budget, as well as in the State of the Nation address, it was reported that a commitment of only over $1 billion has been achieved in the first year, while a disbursement of $2 billion was targeted. Commitment of $1 billion does not mean that money has been disbursed, and there's no clarity at present how much of that has been disbursed. So in order to increase certainty and predictability for investors, we would certainly want to caution and ask that these projects be announced closer to their state of readiness and that stakeholder engagement rather happen before their announcement than subsequent to their announcement to maximize their impact. The special economic zones is an example, for instance, where we're still not certain whether there will be incentives linked to them, and clarity in this regard would certainly go a long way in maximizing what they would be able to do for the economy in the long run. Preferential procurement is something that obviously concerns manufacturers, because we would like to see a swing to a greater uptake of locally manufactured products. This is something that we have proactively partnered with institutions such as proudly South Africa. Treasury plays an important role in facilitating this scheme, and the slow implementation thereof has meant delays in staving off the deindustrialization of the economy. The delays are in short explained in box two, and if there are questions about that, we can take that up, but I won't explain that at length right now, Chairperson. Then I would just like to move to section four of the document, where Tax Policy and Trade Administration is discussed. There is an error at 4.1, that heading should not be preferential procurement, but carbon tax. That section relates to the proposed carbon tax on industry emissions. The manufacturing circle shares the views of other stakeholders that climate change poses a long-term risk and that there are a number of things that must be done. There has been quite significant concerns around the introduction of a carbon tax on industry emissions, because it's one of those things that if it's done in isolation or if it's not done right, it's not done as part of a suite of tools that gets implemented, if it doesn't get done gradually enough, it will cost us in terms of economic growth, it will cost us in terms of jobs, it will cost us in terms of investment and competitiveness. So we welcome further opportunities for engagement, and we're looking forward to the discussion paper that's going to come out in that regard, or that's going to be made available soon. Then as far as Tax and Trade Administration is concerned, the Minister in his budget speech did make mention of some advances that were made in terms of customs officials tightening their focus on undervaluation of imports, and that this has benefited the situation of the clothing and textile industries in particular. However, the feedback that we get from our members are that even in that very sector, the situation is still quite dire. In actual fact, concurrent to this presentation, there is a meeting happening at 120 Plain Street with the Minister of Trade and Industry, where our clothing members, clothing and textile members, are taking issues to the minister to be addressed. I think broadly, the problem there certainly does relate to SARS in a way, which I will explain shortly. But overall, I think it speaks hugely to a lack of coordination and a unity of purpose between our standards authorities, our custom authorities, our trade administration authorities, and then certainly our tax authorities. We are, for instance, aware that decisions get made on a month-to-month basis at SARS on the allocation of project rather than product codes for the importation of goods, and we are unsure to what degree the necessary level of coordination exists to ensure that these project codes are not used to bring in products that were not supposed to be allowed to be granted entry under those decisions. This is quite a difficult matter to grasp with, to deal with for the manufacturing sector, because in many instances, products are landed in South Africa for cheaper than manufacturers can locally procure the raw materials with which to produce those imports, with which to produce those products locally. And as a result, we are deindustrializing. So as far as Treasury is concerned and its ability to influence SARS, or the Minister of Finance's ability to influence SARS and what occurs there, this is definitely a matter that does require urgent attention. And as the example or the short case study in Box 3 indicates, there are tangible projects, investments of millions of rand that have upstream and downstream job creation potential that are being cancelled at the moment as a result of this situation. Chairperson, I think that is the long and the short of what the manufacturing circle would like to bring across today. We'd welcome any questions, and then I must just say that as a result of that meeting at 120 Plain, I would have to ask you leave as soon as the questions are over to go and attend that meeting. But thank you very much.
So which meeting is that?
It's a concurrent meeting with the Minister of Trade at 120 Plain. So I'm saying that as soon as our presentations and questions are over the first session, I will unfortunately have to leave. I won't be able to stay the entire session.
Okay. As long as you stay for your questions, we don't have problems. Thank you very much, Hunrat. We will immediately move and proceed to take the second presentation, and the discussions will then be collapsed in the two presentations.
Thank you, Chair. While we are waiting...
Prof. No, I'm saying welcome, Prof.
Thank you very much. Chair, while we are waiting for the technology to catch up, let me express our appreciation again for the opportunity of being able to share some thoughts with you about the state of the economy and indeed policy formulation. As you indicated, Chair, at the outset, we are we are compelled each year to shorten the amount of time we have in order to be able to formulate a response. We certainly have tried in the last few days to do justice to what was indeed a very important budget, as you yourself said, and as we've said in our comments. It does create an important window of opportunity. Some new options are on the table, but the shelf life of these windows of opportunity are short, and so there is also a sense of urgency, as you have indicated, that we seize those tools and those mechanisms that will make it possible for us to be able to exploit these opportunities. Now, Chair, in our review, which is really divided into three main parts, first is a broad economic overview, then secondly, the positive features of the budget, and then thirdly, some of the vulnerabilities and the risks that we may have to confront when we assess the budget. I'm also hoping, Chair, that as you said at the outset, this whole process here is meant to indeed to culminate in a report which you will prepare, and I'm hoping that the way we are presenting our views this afternoon, or at least this morning, will help you and will resonate on some of the issues that you may want to pick up in your report. So, Chair, if I may then perhaps briefly talk about the whole economic outlook, and especially the global economic outlook. I did appear before this committee about 2 weeks ago, and I don't think much has changed since then. We think that the global outlook is more or less the same. There may be one or two positive aspects which have emerged, but as the Minister of Finance said, we are still exposed to the risks of a very volatile global outlook. And once again, he also drew attention, Chair, to the asymmetrical difference in the growth performance of the developed countries as opposed to the developing countries, especially the bigger ones, where fortunately they are still able to generate quite high rates of growth, including in sub-Saharan Africa. But the conclusion that the minister drew, that these are no grounds for complacency, we face quite important global challenges, that we certainly support that, and that we have to be flexible, we have to innovate, we have to show leadership in both the public and the private sectors in order to make the right choices and to fend off the threats and exploit the opportunities. So, Chair, if I could then turn to some of our forecasts, you will see in the table that by and large there's quite a broad convergence between the forecasts for this year and for next year between the National Treasury and BUSA. We took the risk of looking 12 months ahead, which is quite a risk these days. But we think that if, on the best assumptions, that's how we see the picture. And broadly, we would say, well, that is a comforting, if you compare it with some other countries, very comforting picture. But nonetheless, it's, as we know, and those are the issues that we're talking about here today, it's not satisfactory, it's not enough. And as the Minister of Finance has said, as the aspirations in the new growth path and the National Development Plan have said, we simply have to do much better. We have to push up the growth rate. We have to double it, in effect, over the next few years with all the other composite issues that have to go with it, job creation, poverty alleviation, and so forth. And the important thing is, and I think this is the reiterated message not only of the new growth path and of the National Development Plan, but also of the budget, we've simply got to look further ahead. We've got to get out of short-termism and look much, much further ahead, both in the public and the private sector, because if we want to be where our vision is in 2020 and in 2030, there are some decisions that have to be taken now, and we have to stick with them. So, Chair, that's where we are in terms of our support for the pro-growth stance in the budget, and how it fits in not only to the broad economic background, but also where this country would like to see its economy in the decades ahead. This is very much part of that bigger debate. Now, what are some of the positive features that we see in the budget? Well, firstly, Chair, we certainly thought that this budget, broadly speaking, was a credible budget. It was broadly balanced, and it was confidence building. I'm sure you'll be hearing that from quite a lot of inputs. We certainly welcome the emphasis that has been placed on infrastructure, the important role that it plays in growth, and the important point that we've also made is that the budget recognizes that we have to work within a policy framework in order to get the maximum responses from the private sector, which is predictable, certain, and indeed must be coherent. And that's an important part of the task of this committee is to unpack it and then repack it in a way which comes up with some coherent recommendations around the budget approach. And I think that the other point also that we'd like to perhaps emphasize is the point you made, that we are talking about a Treasury and a fiscal policy which enjoys global recognition. And I think we are very proud of the success which our Treasury and our finance and our public finances have had in that regard. Chair, if I turn to some of the positive features of the budget, some of the more specific ones, well, I think a year ago we were somewhat more nervous about the debt profile, but I'll come back to that later. We haven't shared all our worry, but we've shared some of it. It does appear to be more sustainable. There are strong commitments in the budget speech to keep the fiscus on a sustainable track. The emphasis on the infrastructure, we certainly welcome that. That's certainly an important growth factor on the way ahead. We've got some catching up to do there. And fortunately, as a developing country, we have the space and the need to do so. We make the point, Chair, in the document that, of course, in planning the implementation of this, it's essential to ensure that what we say will happen, and that will happen together with the private sector. And we also refer to the public-private sector partnership framework, which we think is an important component in helping to ensure delivery in respect of the infrastructure. Here we would just remind you, as I think we did 2 weeks ago, that the PPPS National Treasury Unit is in fact in the Treasury, and therefore one would like to ask them what their role is going to be in helping to facilitate the rollout of the expanded infrastructure to the extent that there is a role for the public-private sector partnerships. We ourselves have done a study, and we hope to be able to engage on how to make the PPPs work better. Chair, the other issue which I think is important here is the announcement by the President that he's going to have an infrastructural summit, which, as if we recall the wording in his speech, was not only confined to the social partners, but will also have potential investors there. And I think that's very important. It sends out the right message in terms of what we want to do and what we want to see happen on the infrastructural front. We also welcome the tax relief and the other proposals which will make life easier for small and emerging business. We think that's very important, and we're pleased to see it resonate in the budget. You'll recall I mentioned when I saw you 2 weeks ago that we needed to emphasize this because it resonates with what is being said in both the NGP and the NDP, if I can use those abbreviations. Once again, however, we also caution that there are other constraints having nothing to do with the fiscus that do also inhibit small business, and those will have to be dealt with as well. Chair, we also see a theme that runs throughout the budget speech, which I think might also deserve the support of this committee, that we do need to be more competitive. We do need to enlarge our share of world trade and world investment. We're not getting the share that we ought to in order to be able to grow more rapidly. So certainly we support the measures, and we hope that they will be implemented. Some of them were announced before and haven't happened yet, but certainly that's one of the important themes that needs to come through from this budget, is effective implementation of what has already been decided and funded. We support the emphasis that has been put in the budget in regard to the mining industry and to take advantage of world markets when they're moving in our favor. I would just draw your attention to a statement by the Chamber of Mines in the last few days, and they're one of the members of MUSA, to remind us that if we can make this infrastructural plan work, and if we can in fact implement what we've said we will do, then the mining industry thinks it could increase its job creation by 45% over the next 8 years if we could resolve the bottlenecks in the transport infrastructure. So that's quite an important promissory note, if I can call it that, on job creation, provided we deliver and make it possible for the private sector to maximize its impact. Chair, you will see the document also refers, of course, to the remarks in the budget speech about dealing with fraud and corruption. We support them fully. We think there's some advantages in using the mechanisms that have been suggested, especially the policing of pricing through the tendering system, which has been proposed. That's very important, and we certainly support that. Chair, there was some earlier reference to the carbon tax, which certainly BUSA does agree with. We also agree that there must be a further process of consultation to get it right and to do it for the right reasons in the right timing. And that's very important, and that's why these consultations are significant, and we look forward to the next round. Chair, in this whole story and saga about delivery, we know it's an issue very much at the local and indeed at the provincial government level. So I'm pleased to be talking to the Joint Committee here today, because quite clearly the message of the budget to all levels of government is, let's try and see if we can improve delivery. Let's see what we need to do, not only in terms of capacity building, not only in terms of better funding, but also, as I come back to the earlier point, how can we work together with the private sector in order to make delivery happen? That means we have to think outside the box, then so be it. Chair, the issue of phasing in the national health insurance and the security reform, we think that makes sense, and we support that because we need to phase it in a way that will ensure that it will be successful and will provide what it needs to provide for those who need it within a reasonable period. We also support the emphasis, Chair, which the Minister placed on the youth wage subsidy. We would like to see it sooner rather than later. Certainly business has thrown its weight behind that. And perhaps generally, Chair, because it ties in not only with your own hearing of 2 weeks ago, which was prior to the budget, but also the fact that the Minister and the National Treasury have gone out of their way this year to initiate prior consultation with the social partners in NEDLAC, and we certainly hope that not only that will be repeated next year, but that it will be held somewhat earlier than it was this year, but that was due to circumstances beyond all our control. Now, Chair, so I think that's the, if I can put it that way, that's the good news we've got to capitalize on, which come out of the budget and which underpin where we want to go in terms of growth and employment and all the associated good things that we desperately want to see for the population at large. There are some vulnerabilities and there are some risks given the kind of world that we're living and given the fact that our Minister of Finance and the National Treasury do not have a clean page to write on each time they write the budget speech. They inherit the situation. They're working within a certain coherent framework, and it doesn't always prove possible to address all the vulnerabilities and all the risks. I think the only points we would share with you here is, yes, if you look at the headline fiscal ratios, they look healthy, but there are some underlying vulnerabilities because state debt costs are still rising faster or are the fastest growing item, and obviously that has to be brought under control in terms of indeed having better control over a current state spending. And this might be another message that this committee may or may not want to take forward, because it does leave us vulnerable if something really goes wrong in the global economy, or if the exchange rate was to strongly weaken and becomes necessary to put up interest rates, then those numbers could all look very different. So all we're saying is, and I think you'll recall, Chair, that at the last presentation I showed you some research of how much wiggle room 27 countries had on the fiscal front, and we were in the amber zone. Well, we're still in the amber zone. We haven't moved out of it. And so in that sense, we are sending out a positive message. We've stabilized the situation for the time being, but there are some risks. The second issue, Chair, is this issue of vulnerability on the question of state capacity. The Minister did refer to it. He spoke about the need that we must create a capable state. We've used the words a delivery state is what the country wants. And a lot of what he has said in the budget is aimed at seeking to do that, especially on the infrastructure side. We support what has been said already, both in the budget and in the NDP, that we need to strengthen professionalism in the civil service. It's got to be geared towards delivery. And we've got to look very consciously at how the private sector can help that process, or in some cases assist the government in its delivery goals. The issue of administered prices, the previous speaker has, I think, spoken quite strongly on that, and I must say that's a view shared very much by BUSA as a whole. I think the business community as a whole, and not just the manufacturing sector, feels that this is one of the Achilles heel of what we're planning to do. If we do not get the financing and the cost structure of our state-owned enterprises and those who are responsible for rolling out the larger part of this infrastructure under some kind of control, we do run the risk of some counterproductive outcomes. Whether you're talking about electricity or water tariffs or wherever we're planning new infrastructure, we must be absolutely clear in advance how it can be financed. User charges, or it's going to be levies, or is it going to be through taxes? And we must apply the test of affordability, not only for business, but for the population at large. And even to do the right thing in the wrong way, as we see with the toll roads, is a huge problem. Because even after the decision about toll roads, there's the bigger question which this committee will face, and that is, but how do we finance this infrastructure without getting a backlash? Now, we need better mechanisms of consultation and indeed research, which will make it possible for us to look at the implications of these decisions, so we take the right decisions at the right time about infrastructure, which will support our future growth. And that, of course, ties in with the role of the SOEs themselves. As you know, there is a study underway which started about a year ago, and I think I mentioned it when I spoke to you about 2 weeks ago. We're expecting the report from the Presidential Commission on state-owned enterprises, on how they should operate, what should their role be, what are the checks and balances that they should have, how much competition should they face in this new world in order to function effectively. that report should be expedited, perhaps, because quite clearly events are moving on. And as I said to you right at the outset, and you said, Chair, there are some decisions we must grapple with now. In fact, sometimes I hear the answer, yes, but that's long term. My answer is, because it's long term, you start now. And if we're going to think to 2020 and 2030, then there are some decisions, some tough decisions that have to be taken now. Chair, just finally, let me just sum up one or two points which are in the document. On the tax side, well, I think you have some experts here who will speak to some of those specifics. We just make the point that, once again, like with toll roads, what you've ended up now, you've got the tolls, or being reduced, and you've got an increase in fuel levy. And I think it comes back to the process by which these decisions are taken. And I come back to the point, the importance of consultation, even when you're working out a compromise, in order to get buy-in to that compromise. So you may want to interrogate that aspect a little more, either with the sectors concerned, that's transport, travel and tourism, or perhaps find out what some of the motivation was on the part of the Treasury. Chair, the final point is, of course, that it's essential that we have social safety nets in this country, and we have over the past decade or more been able to develop quite an effective one. We're hoping to make it more effective. The budget points out that our social spending now comprises 58% of government of government expenditure, up from 49%, and roughly one-third of our population receives a grant of one kind or another. Minister made the point, and I think I made the point 2 weeks ago, just a cautionary note, this kind of redistribution not only has its limits, but it is not a substitute for growth and job creation. That's why the other aspects of the budget are so important, because the more you can push growth, the more you can push employment, the less you will be dependent on welfare payments. So finally, Chair, I think in the document it says that we must not procrastinate. If we look at where things have gone wrong in the world, and I don't want to oversimplify, but so often, even in the case of the Greek saga, it was procrastination that led to the culmination of a crisis that could no longer be well controlled. In other words, the warning signs were not heeded when they should have been and when action should have been taken. We are in a fortunate position, because partly because of the processes we follow, that we are able, if we apply our minds to it, to identify the signals which will help us to tell what to do next and what we want to do in the long term and what we need to implement. I come back to the point I made at the outset, Chair. One of the most important messages that this committee can put out is we must now implement effectively what we've agreed and what we have funded and for which the money is available. If I had to paraphrase the Minister of Finance, he's saying we are in a situation of too much money chasing too little capacity. That's the balance we've got to find. We've got to build the capacity to take what is available and turn it into something that makes a difference on the ground, and we certainly in business are pledged to assist government and indeed Parliament to do that. Chair, finally, when I was sort of pondering for some inspiration over the weekend about the inputs I got from business about the budget, I found some inspiration in an unusual place, in Hamlet. And you all know the great salute, to be or not to be. Well, I thought he had something to say about our priorities, to grow or not to grow. That is the question. Whether it is nobler for the economy to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous global markets, or take arms against a sea of internal troubles, and by opposing them, to end them. To delay, to procrastinate no more, and by effective delivery, to say we end the heartache and the thousand shocks the economy is heir to, that's a consummation which is devoutly to be wished. I'm hoping that we will be able to trance those wishes into reality in our discussions here. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Prof. It is as if you were not here with us last week. in terms of your presentation, or just a week before the budget was presented. Honorable members, I think we should, I know we need to get into the discussions, but I thought if we give ourselves 5 minutes leg stretch and come back and take the question. It's not tea break, just 5 minutes leg stretch. Justice.
Why in the way?
Okay. All right. You are roaming. Okay.
The budget is so positive.
Yeah.
I don't think you have any questions.